Seems to make sense on this Valentine's Day that we look at love. How about a history of love? In Marilyn Yalom's new book, The Amorous Heart, An Unconventional History of Love, she tracks the heart metaphor and iconography that go across 2,500 years through Greco-Roman poetry, Christian theology, medieval miniatures, Shakespearean drama, Enlightenment science, and into the present to shed light on how human beings have found, expressed, and experienced love itself. She contends that love's history is defined by a tension between romance and sex on one hand, and religion and spirituality on the other. Again, the name of the book is The Amorous Heart, An Unconventional History of Love. Marilyn Yalom is a senior scholar at the Clayman Institute for Gender Research at Stanford University, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
A pleasure.
What brought you to this unconventional history?
Well, I had an epiphany in the British Museum in 2011. I was attending an exhibition of medieval artifacts, and among the gold coins and pieces of jewelry that were part of a treasure hoard discovered in 1976, there was this amazing, beautifully shaped brooch in the form of a heart. And once I looked at that, I had this explosion of images in my head of hearts, Valentine Day cards and candies in the shape of hearts. And I turned to the man who was taking me around, who just happened to be the medieval curator, and I said, "When did that heart come into being?" And he responded that it was common by the 14th century. And from that moment on, I had to go digging into the museums and libraries to find out where it had come from.
So ultimately, we're looking at some 2,500 years of history.
Exactly. Because the first heart-shaped forms, and I say heart-shaped because that is how we recognize that form with two lobes on the top and the point on the bottom, that's what we call it today. But when it first appeared way, way back before 3rd century BC in what is today Libya, of all places, it was just a shape based on nature, and in that particular case, in a coin from what was then Libya, based on a seed pod. So it didn't have the meaning that it has for us today.
Because we think of it as obviously the heart, but having some a way of looking at the human heart. But obviously they wouldn't have known what the human heart looked like at that time. And so this is, that is their interpretation. What you write about in the book, which I find so interesting, is then how ultimately it becomes coupled with the idea of love, not just a heart, but of love.
Yes. Now, the idea that the heart was the home of love goes way, way back in writing and in thinking, way back to Plato and Aristotle and all the earliest thinkers. But there had been no visual representation of the heart as symbolizing love, and that doesn't come into the Middle Ages in the context of courtly love in both France and later in England.
Now, none of this comes easy, right? As far as the disputes that people have over the function of the heart, what the heart does, what the heart means, and ultimately how it serves and its purpose, and that is something that has been debated and disputed and fought over by philosophers and physicians for a very, very long time.
Yes, the early thinking about the heart, Galen's thinking. He was a second century physician. That held on for centuries and began to be disputed around the time of the Renaissance with the physician Vesalius, who corrected some of Galen's ideas. But the real turning point was with Harvey in the 17th century, who discovered the circulation of blood. And in some ways, the whole metaphoric ideas about the heart were reduced to that of a pump. The heart was a pump. And we begin to have the thinkers who see it only as a pump rather than as a symbol of love.
Marilyn Yalom is the author of the new book, The Amorous Heart, An Unconventional History of Love. Looking at the dating of that symbol is one thing, but going back and realizing at what point people started to see it and make that connection to a heart, and then later to make that connection to love, when did we start to see that become commonplace, if that's the appropriate term?
Well, there were two things going on, and this is what I had to work on when I was working on my book. It's one thing, as you say, to look at this visual representation of the heart as a symbol of love, and we can trace that back to a period between 1250 and 1350. But the idea that the heart is the home of love, or that it has a very special connection, a religious connection to God, all of that goes way back even earlier. So the interesting thing is that you have two currents going on, ideas about the heart and its relationship to our emotional life, and then also you have the heart as being the seat of the soul, and that goes back to the Bible and to early church thinkers. And it's a very complicated story, much more so than I realized when I undertook this book.
So let us talk about the religious aspect of this for a moment, because you write in the book that Catholics, Protestants, they have used the heart for religious meaning, for religious purposes.
Indeed. In fact, if you look at some of the mystics, say somebody like Gertrude von Helfte in the 12th century, or around 1200, she wrote about Jesus' heart and the exchange of her heart with his, which became a fairly common theme both in religious thinking and in romantic thinking. And eventually, those ideas of focusing on the heart of Jesus worked into the cult, into the religious devotion that we call the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And we begin to see representations of that Sacred Heart around 1400. And on top of that, you begin to have the devotion that's called the Immaculate Heart of Mary. So you have those two hearts, those two religious hearts in conjunction with one another. And they parallel the secular heart, where one offers one's heart to one's beloved.
Marilyn Yalom is the author of The Amorous Heart, An Unconventional History of Love. I do want to focus on two words that are in the title of the book. One is amorous and the other is unconventional. Let us begin with amorous. So what brought you to that for the title of the book?
Once I had the title, in essence, I had the book, because that's based on, of course, the Latin amor, meaning love. And when we think of amorous, we think primarily of romantic or sexual love, but essentially it means the loving heart. Now, to be blunt, the loving heart is not as good a title as the amorous heart, so we stayed with the amorous heart. And unconventional, yes, I think this is an unconventional history of love, because I trace love, historically, using the heart as a compass. And it's a way of entering into a symbol that is both verbal and visual, and it takes us through 2,500 years, showing that sometimes it is language which leads the way to this very moment when we talk about being brokenhearted or when we talk about not putting our heart on our sleeve. That holds on. Language has a kind of power, and language then opens the way into the way we think about subjects like love, in this case, love in particular. And then when words fail us, we have the image, and the image is there. It's there not just on Valentine's and candies, but we have it now in emoji. So when we're writing to someone on our computer and we want to add something very special at the end, we add a heart.
Looking at that idea, is there another symbol that comes even close to the heart? I mean, you mentioned emojis, but is there something that even comes as close to that universal symbol that has had the history and has been around for as long as that symbol?
I guess the cross and the religious symbols,
yes,
they have had that power and still do. But in the contemporary world, if you go to Paris, as I was recently, and you find I Heart Paris, based upon the I Heart logo, Milton Glaser's creation in 1977, or if you get a letter from China, you're going to have a heart image sometimes in your email. And so that heart symbol now has become universal. And I can't think of any other symbol that has that appeal. And one of the reasons the heart works so beautifully is that it's symmetrical. It has two lobes on top. It has a point at the bottom. And I think that it does so many things. For one thing, it speaks to that platonic idea that each one of us is looking for our other half. Well, where do you get that better visualized than in a heart? You have each half coming together to form a whole. And then I think on an unconscious level, you have the lobes suggesting breasts and buttocks. I won't go into the phallic sense of the point, but I think all of that is there. And that's why the heart has become such a perfect symbol for love.
That idea of the sexual imagery, evoking that sexual imagery of the heart, was that there from the very beginning, or did that evolve?
Not really. And this is the thing that's so fascinating. I spent a lot of time tracking down the very first images that were based on nature and that were purely decorative. There's a Persian vase from the 6th century that has a row of what we would call hearts, and I don't think it has anything at all to do with the heart. I think it's just a beautiful decorative symbol that could have meant a number of things. Perhaps we don't know what it meant at the time. But I think of it as a form in search of a meaning. It didn't find its meaning until courtly love came along, and then it was picked up by artists and artisans and turned into our own familiar heart icon.
Valentine's Day and that concept comes late in your book. So I assume
right.
It comes late in the history.
Well, you know, we don't know. Here's what we do know. There was a Christian martyr in the 2nd century, and he was called Valentine in Rome. And he was canonized around 490-something as Saint Valentine. That much we know. And then in the late 14th century in the poetry of Chaucer and in one or two French poets of the time, there are these allusions to Valentine's Day when birds come together to choose their mates. So we know that Valentine's Day in the late Middle Ages, 1400, is already a holiday in France and England, and that's where it takes off. And from that point on, we do have a wonderful history of Valentine's Day, which is still called St. Valentine's Day in Catholic countries like France.
The name of the new book is The Amorous Heart, An Unconventional History of Love. Marilyn Yalom is the author. The book is published by Basic. I want to, that idea of taking off, I just want to read a line from the beginning of chapter 13, which is, the English were slower than the Italians in creating great love poetry and slower than the French, Dutch, and Germans in publishing emblem books. But during the 16th century, English poets and playwrights produced immortal literature that illuminated the amorous heart. The name of this chapter is How Shakespeare Probed the Heart's Secrets. Talk a little bit about Shakespeare and what was done at that time in moving this idea of the heart forward.
Well, it's very interesting that for centuries, most thinkers, philosophers, even physicians, poets, thought of the heart as the home of love. But around the late 16th century, that is the time of Shakespeare, we begin to have questions about the brain. The sense that maybe it isn't the heart that is the home of love. Maybe the brain has something to do with our emotions. And in one of the last, in one of the scenes of, I think it's The Merchant of Venice, you have a song that goes on in the back of the play. There is the question, is fancy in the heart bred or bred in the head? And so you have this question already at the time of Shakespeare as to where where love is located, fancy being, in this case, another word for love. And Shakespeare, more than any other writer of the time, uses the word heart. In fact, he uses it about 1,000 times in his writing. And he carries it into, he expands our ideas about the heart, because the heart is not only the home of love, but it's the home of all of our turbulent emotions, from our fears and joys, deception, revenge. And you think of some of the Shakespearean characters, whether it's Othello goaded on by Iago or to kill his beloved Desdemona, or it's large-hearted Antony who's led to by Cleopatra to disaster. And in Shakespeare, the heart takes on what I call characterological significance. One's heart determines one's destiny. So does the heart still stand primarily for amorous love? Yes, certainly, but it takes on this broader emotional range.
And you talk about that in the book, about this tension between romance and sex that is very much defined in that symbol, in that idea.
Yes, when we see a heart, we think first and foremost of romance, but it can expand to mean so much more, because we heart a city with people in it we don't even know. We send little hearts to our children and grandchildren, or they to us, so that this icon, which appears everywhere, can mean more than just romantic love or sexual love. It has taken on the whole world. And one of the things that I ask in my book now that the heart icon appears everywhere, is there a danger of overuse? Can we think of it as a, you know, a commercial logo on low-fat foods and still think of it, does it have, will it still have its punch? And for the moment, I think it does, but who knows where commerce will take it.
That's really interesting, but it seems that, just with the thousands of years of history, that it is with us and something that is ingrained into us almost from our birth.
I think that's true. I think the variety of heart images today is astonishing. You know, obviously, I went online and I started looking at the plethora of photos culled from the worlds of romance and religion and nature. And they just go on endlessly. I would recommend that someone who's interested in this just go online and put on heart-shaped images. And you'll see a flock of birds flying in heart formation or a stag with heart-shaped antlers. I mean, we impose upon nature our vision of the heart as love. And when we find it there in nature, it even prompts some of us to experience a kind of pantheism. The phrases about the heart, they just go on and on. Staying aligned with your heart and soul connects you to the universe. That's the sort of thing that I found in writing. Or, you know, above all else, pay attention to your heart. So the idea that the heart should lead in our personal experience and in our experience of the world and in our experience of relationships with others. You know, Pascal said long ago that in opposition to the idea that the heart was a mere pump, that the heart has its reasons, which reason does not know. And I think we continue to think along those lines, that the heart is still the home of emotion and particularly of love.
Marilyn Yellum is the author of the new book, The Amorous Heart, An Unconventional History of Love. The book is published by Basic Books. Marilyn, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Pleasure for me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The Amorous Heart, An Unconventional History of Love. The book is published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.